Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and these are the stories that you need to know about today. India has a U.S.-style corruption problem, a big one. Bizarre handshake between Macron and President Xi, one that you have to see. Also, a dead puppy becomes the country's most important news story right now. Yeah, it is. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. So India has a corruption problem. It's getting a lot of news these days. You want to see what it looks like, by the way? This image is amazing. Go ahead, Victor. Show them the look at that. You see that? What you're looking at right there is the loot from what police in India are calling one of the biggest ever black money hauls by any single agency in a single operation in the country's history. Now, obviously, the currency in India is rupees, but if those were American dollars, you'd be looking at roughly $35 million. Now, if you want to know what that is from, basically corruption. Corruption. Government officials taking what appears to be bribes from construction projects and other assorted entities. And when the Modi government apparently, credit, right? Kudos to the Modi government, if it's true. According to reports, when the Modi government found out about this, they sent in authorities and authorities conducted raids. And that's what led to that loot that I just showed you, all that money there. By the way, before we get too high on our horse, you know, about the corruption in other countries, oh, not us, let's not forget, what you're seeing right there in India is likely not too different from what happens here. Except here in the U.S., it tends to be dark money. It comes from individuals, it comes from corporations, and for the most part, it's legal. It's legal, legal bribery. Yeah, that's right. Ever since Citizens United. Credit President Modi, when he found out about this, he held a news conference, and here's what he said.
Today, mountains of currency notes are being found in the neighboring state, Jharkhand. People are saying he did the theft and money is being taken by Modi. Now tell me, if I stop their theft, stop their earning, stop their loot, will they abuse Modi or not? But should I do this work or not?
Says he's gonna do the work, and even for that, he's being criticized. By the way, don't worry about Modi not winning his election. It looks like it's gonna be a landslide. On another side of the story, and I think this is really important when we look at this, is the fact that the Indian government recently has been making overtures, right? We reported this, what, last week? With the United States, with Tesla, with Elon Musk, with BlackRock, etc. And I guess you can't help but think that, well, if they want to be like the United States, well, at least they're starting to get the corruption part right. Manila Chang joins me to talk a little bit about this. But what is your take on this situation in India, Manila?
Yeah, Rick, a couple of things we have to point out here. So that big pile of money, right, is something like 200 to 300 million rupees that were found in the rural development minister's domestic helper's bedroom. So basically this is like the maid, if you will. I don't know if it's a man or a woman, but the domestic helper's bedroom. So either this is corruption or the development minister pays really, really well. You're right. This is American style.
I would just think of it. We've been talking about how India's economy is zooming soon to be the second or third biggest economy in the world, maybe reaching GDP 10 trillion. They're doing so well that domestic help is paid in the millions of dollars. I think that's a fascinating point you raise. I want to move on to something else now. No, go ahead.
Can I do one more thing?
Sure.
On the American part here, we need to point out that it's not just Citizens United, Rick. It's also, nowadays, it's somewhat blatantly out in the open. If we compare what's happening right now, right this very moment, right here in Washington, with the New Jersey Democratic Congressman Bob Menendez, there was a raid on his home just this past September. Yeah. They found $500,000 in cash stuffed in random spots in his house, in coat pockets and shoes and his wife's extra purses and gold bars.
Gold bars,
this
exactly.
This is a sitting congressman with open indictment charges. So, you know, they're really going after the American style over there in India.
I want to show you another piece of video now that caught my attention. This is fascinating, and I think when you see it, you're going to think about the same thing that I thought when I watched this video. Go ahead. Play this, Victor. This is President Xi of China meeting with President Macron of France. Look at the handshake. Look at the eyes, right? There it is. If you can tell for whom this is a big deal and for whom this is not, the one guy's impressed and wants to show that all. The other guy's like, eh, whatever. The handshake tells everything. Maybe one more time, Victor, if you can show that video, look at their expressions. It's the start of a two-day visit, and according to the Associated Press and other reports coming out of there, Macron is trying to woo Xi while trying to get him to turn on Russia. China's been mostly somewhere between neutral or supportive, depends on what you read, of Russia and the Ukraine conflict. Macron is trying to turn him, but judging from the pics, Manila, as far as I'm not a body language expert, but whatever Macron is selling, I'm not sure Xi is buying.
Yeah, I'm no body language expert either, but you know, usually if you're trying to court somebody, I've been a lady that was single once upon a time, and you can read from body language, right? When a lady is not interested, she crosses her leg the other way, her feet are pointing in the other direction, she looks away from you. That's exactly what we're seeing here with President Xi. So if Macron is trying to court China to play ball with the EU and with France, I don't think this is a great start to this two-day state visit slash date.
I would agree with you. Although those guards, they look really cool, by the way. Just saying. who dresses like that? Look at what happened at a commencement ceremony recently. What I'm about to show you occurred at the University of Michigan. Roll it. Now, this is fascinating because as we watch this, and I think we've got some sound that should come up, you hear people reacting to these protesters who suddenly stood up. This is totally organic, in the middle of a graduation ceremony. And they stood up and essentially, you know, what they're arguing is that the, you know, situation in Gaza should be controlled, that the United States should stop giving money to Israel, and they're supportive of Palestinians. What's fascinating is it wasn't like other protests because most of the people in the audience, among them students and their families, stood up and applauded them while they were doing this organic protest. Yeah. You say what?
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that this is the University of Michigan Ann Arbor graduation. This is the big graduation ceremony. Tens of thousands of people were in the stands, similar to like a football game,
yeah,
right? And when this protest, this mini protest kind of broke out, one, it was completely peaceful, as you can see. There was no counter demonstrations that made a scene. But we should point out that Michigan, the state of Michigan, is home to the biggest Arab American population in the United States. So I think this particular feeling and sentiment is supported by so many people and friends of people that are have families impacted over in Palestine right now. So I think, you know, this is reflective of what's happening here in the United States.
And it's also reflective in many ways of how the people in the United States at the time don't agree with either their media or their politicians, who are telling a very different story. And the fact that something like this, as you and I just discussed, can happen organically is what really is the driver in something like this, which really, I think, makes a difference, and why I think this is going to be an ongoing story, especially when it comes to the election of the president of the United States right now, Joe Biden, or at least what he's trying to do to get reelected. All right.
Michigan's a swing state, Rick.
A big swing state.
Don't forget.
Something just happened in the news world, in cable news in particular, and I want you to see this. This is possibly one of the most foolhardy, most ridiculous comments I've ever heard from a CNN news presenter, and boy, I've heard a lot. Remember, this is Dana Bash. I used to work with Dana. As most of you know, I worked at CNN, and I worked at Fox, and I worked at you know, a lot of other networks, but when I worked at CNN, she was one of my colleagues. She is suggesting that prior to October 7th, Palestinians lived wonderful, peaceful lives in a ceasefire situation. Then she goes on to say that too many Jewish Americans are feeling uncomfortable right now. She's fair to say that, but isn't that simply a byproduct of free speech? Some people are made uncomfortable when you have free speech. Democrats make Republicans feel uncomfortable. It's the other way around. Anglo-Americans make some African-Americans feel uncomfortable and vice versa. But wait, I'm about to play this for you, okay? And it gets worse because according to Bash, the pro-Palestinian supporters should be compared to, wait for it, Nazis. Here it is.
These protests started peacefully with legitimate questions about the war, but in many cases, they lost the plot. They're calling for a ceasefire. Well, there was a ceasefire on October 6th, the day before Hamas terrorists brutally murdered more than 1,000 people inside Israel and took hundreds more as hostages. Now, protesting the way the Israeli government, the Israeli prime minister is prosecuting the retaliatory war against Hamas is one thing. Making Jewish students feel unsafe at their own schools is unacceptable, and it is happening way too much right now.
I'm a UCLA student. I deserve to go here. We pay tuition. This is our school, and they're not letting me walk in. My class is over there. I want to use that entrance. Why can't they go? Will you let me go in? This could be over in a second. Just let me and my friends go in.
Again, what you just saw is 2024 in Los Angeles, harkening back to the 1930s in Europe. And I do not say that lightly.
What in the hell? Comparing a protest because some young man can't get into his school through one entrance? By the way, he can go through the other entrance, but he wants to go in that entrance, is the same as people being slaughtered in Nazi Germany, Jews being essentially sent to concentration camps. It seems unfathomable to me, Manila. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's crazy that she would go out that far, Rick, to say that this is comparable to Nazi Germany. I mean, to your point, everybody has feelings and everybody's going to have them hurt once in a while. You can feel how you want. Only you are in control of how you feel. These students who are demonstrating, so long as it be peaceful and there's no physical violence, these students have the right to do that. Now, this kid, like you said, there's a million entrances at UCLA. UCLA is a huge campus. I'm sure he could find a different way around, but this harkens back to the 1950s and 60s right here in the United States, when somebody like Rosa Parks decides to not get up out of her seat. Did the white lady that demanded that seat, did she feel uncomfortable? Probably.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you know the outcome, right?
Listen, I'm Hispanic. I know how many Hispanics in the United States are often made uncomfortable when they're called illegal, though their ancestors have been here for 300 years. I'm sure Asian Americans are often made uncomfortable. In fact, I know that that's happening right now in certain parts of the west part of the United States. This is part of free speech. People are made uncomfortable, Manila.
Oh, yeah. This the good and the bad. Free speech is there to allow people to voice whatever that opinion is. Sometimes it's hateful. Sometimes it's hurtful. But you know what? You cannot legislate hate if you believe somebody is hateful. You can't legislate hate. That comes from the heart. What you can legislate against is physical acts of violence. And we already have laws around that. We don't need Dana Bash lecturing people about people's feelings and how they should protect feelings.
Yeah, no, I could not. I think most Americans agree with you 100%. Thanks, partner. Good to see you. Take good care of the family. All right, when we come back, is the U.S. preparing for a war with China? And is that why we're sending Taiwan so many billions of dollars in money and weapons? We're going to talk to the author of that report. KJ Ngo joins us. He's up next. Don't go away. Hey, welcome back. This is Direct Impact, and I'm Rick Sanchez. KJ Ngo is a journalist. He's a political analyst, he's a writer, and a teacher specializing in the geopolitics of the Asia-Pacific region. And we join him now, or should I say he joins us. KJ, thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure to be with you.
Hey, so you recently wrote, and I read with interest, that the U.S. sending communication systems to Taiwan is like painting eyes on Buddha, which I thought was a fascinating way to express yourself. And you go on to say that it could be a lethal link in a transnational coalition kill chain for a war with China. Those are big words, scary words. What do you mean? Explain that to us.
Well, the term transnational kill chain is not my language. It's the language of the U.S. military. This is how they describe what they're doing, that they're building out a transnational kill chain against China. What they mean specifically is that they're giving the tactical data link system to the Taiwan military. That allows them to share a common operational and tactical picture of the battlefield with the United States, with South Korea, with Japan, who they're all corralling into this multinational coalition force to, in my opinion, wage war against China. So it literally is, as I put it, like painting the eyes on the Buddha. When you build a Buddha sculpture or you paint one, that is the last piece that you paint. And when that is done, it's considered that the statue is seeing. It can see. It has this vision. Huh. And that's what this Link 16 does.
I'm wondering if you had a chance to see this video of President Xi going to Paris to meet with the president of President Macron of France. And the story is France is now trying to woo Xi, even though they've had some serious problems in the past. And as you look at this picture, it looks like Xi is not buying whatever Macron is selling. Tell us about the relationship between these two men and these two countries.
Well, it's a complex one. On the one hand, China does want to reach out to Europe. Certainly, it seems that Macron is a person that he sees as a potential ally in Europe. The rest of the EU is not favorably disposed. Certainly, the Five Eyes and other countries are not well disposed to China.
Why not? Why not? What are you trying to say with that?
Essentially, they're following the lead of the United States, which is escalating to war with China. It's very clear.
So why do you invite a guy to your house and shake his hand or try to shake his hand, and he doesn't really want to shake your hand, at least from what I can tell right there. If you really hate him and you want to go to war with him, I mean, going to war, I mean, I want to kill you and I want to kill your people, but by the way, come on in and have some hors d'oeuvres. What the hell is that all about?
Well, you know, the Chinese don't want to kill anybody. They want good relations. They want good trade relations with China, with Europe, with the rest of the world. That's what they're doing. They build. They don't bomb. It is the United States which is encircling China with 330 bases. It's placing missiles on every single one of the islands of the first island chain, intermediate range missiles that give China absolutely no strategic depth, that it has to react immediately. And those missiles could be nuclear. And so this is a situation very, very similar to what we saw in the Ukraine. Now, why does the U.S. want to do this? What makes me think that the U.S. wants to do this? Well, certainly there's the massive information warfare, and that level of information warfare is what you see in preparation for kinetic war. You also see the shaping of the environment. I'm talking about military exercises. I'm talking about pre-positioning of troops and logistical elements, as well as fuel. I'm talking about this incredible escalation, this building together of alliances, this constant rehearsal of war exercises against China, very, very much in your face, very, very real. These are not, you know, these are not your standard run-of-the-mill exercises. And then the most important thing is you see the constant provocation. You see the U.S. constantly using its proxies, namely the Philippines and other countries, to drive into the paint over and over again trying to draw the foul. That's what you see happening right now.
You know,
there are troops.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to pick up on what you're about to say about troops. And there's an image that too few Americans understand that I think is important, and that is what you mentioned about these military exercises that seem to be going on constantly. By the way, there were military exercises in the Black Sea just before we invaded Ukraine. There are now military exercises in the areas of the South China Sea and even around Taiwan, which makes people think if you did it before, you'll do it again. But this is the point I wanted to make to you that I think too few in the West understand because the media doesn't cover this. Wouldn't it be the same? Like, I happen to be talking to you right now from South Florida. We're in Miami. If tomorrow, either the Russians or the Chinese or the Iranians or any country, even maybe one of our allies, started doing military exercises off the coast of Miami Beach while people are on the beach sunning themselves, and they watch these soldiers and jumping out of helicopters and, you know, missiles being fired, of course, foe missiles or whatever being fired, not that they're killing anybody, off the coast of Miami Beach, wouldn't that be the same as what people in China are seeing with U.S. and its allies doing military exercises off their coast? Or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what they're seeing. And not only are they seeing, these exercises, I mean, in recent exercises, they're using like $500,000 missiles. They're actually firing them and using them in live exercises. You don't usually do that unless you're getting very, very serious about war. But the key thing that I want to point out is right now, the United States has troops on Jinmen Island, which is about 3 kilometers away from the Chinese mainland. That's one of the small islands that belongs to Taiwan province, but it is so close that it is within visual distance of Xiamen, the major mainland city. This is like the Chinese PLA placing troops on Key West. If they were doing exercises, if you had PLA troops placed on Key West, would the United States consider that to be some kind of a provocation?
All right, let me push back on that just a little bit, because I certainly understand the point that's very well made by you. And I think the example of Key West or Miami Beach or even the Bahamas or Puerto Rico would certainly fit what's going on in the South China Sea. But let's move away from the South China Sea. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Taiwan. As the U.S. State Department sees it, Taiwan is a country that is being threatened by China. Let me say that again. The U.S. State Department says that Taiwan is a country that is being threatened by China. China would argue what?
China would argue what exactly the United States itself agrees to, that the U.S. State Department agrees that Taiwan is not a country. They agree that there is only one China. This is in the State Department website. You can go up and read it itself. There is only one China. And Taiwan is a province. It is a part of China, and that the PRC is the legitimate government. This
okay,
is
so but let me just
this
stop you.
This is what was recognized. Yes,
but let me just stop you.
In the three communiques.
I get it, mm-hmm. and I think most of the nomenclature that you're stating is correct from what I have read as well. But then the U.S. would argue, yeah, but there's a very strong separatist movement in Taiwan. There are people in Taiwan who no longer want to be a part of China, that has its historic roots as well. Therefore, China should back the hell off and let us go in there and help these poor Taiwanese people establish their independence, to which you say what?
To which I say, first, that is not true. The vast majority of people on Taiwan Island want to keep the status quo, and their constitution itself recognizes that Taiwan province is part of China. And they have never had the votes to be able to change that in their own constitution. So both the US State Department, the Taiwanese constitution, the Taiwanese people, the United Nations, and the vast majority of people on the planet recognize Taiwan as a part of China.
KJ, final point before we run out of time, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about what's going on in India. I know you know the region. It looks like Modi's going to be reelected by a landslide. What are the pitfalls there that they need to be concerned about? And is there an issue with the relationship with China that continues?
Well, I think there is an ongoing relationship with China that is very problematic. The United States has created the Quad Formation, which is essentially using India as the left tackle against China in this encirclement. That is to say, the Quad is the US, India, Australia, and Japan, and they are kind of a block that they're forming in order to contend and contain China, along with AUKUS, JACUS, JAFUS. It's one of a series of what they refer to as minilateral alliances that they want to stitch together into a pan-Asian NATO to essentially take down China. India is very, very important in this, but India also has a dual role because it has not come along for the ride completely. It still has good relations with Russia. This has to do with historical reasons. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's partially in the doghouse and partially at the dining table. And it will remains to be seen which way India will go.
Final question, yes or no. Macron, the US, other Western countries will be able to convince China to back off its adherence and its amicable relationship with China. Yes or no?
Je crois pas. I don't think so.
Ain't gonna happen. Got it. KJ, no. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to you. Congratulations on your writings, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you here once again.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Before we go, I want to remind you of something. It's our mission, really, to de-silo the world. I mean, that's why we do this show, right? We've got to stop living in these little boxes where only our truth matters, or maybe me and my neighbor, etc. Truths don't live in boxes. Truths are everywhere. That's what we try to say here, night in, night out. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you again next time, right here, hoping to make a direct impact.